Mini-episode 912 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to mini episode 912 of the FDH Lounge. I'm FDH managing partner Rick Morris here today with part one of our history of Guiding Light, America's longest running soap opera. In our estimation, there were five eras of the program in the final quarter century of the show that is the part remembered by most fans, and those are parts 2 through 6 of our series, following the preface. Part 7 is our list of the greatest characters of the modern era. For me personally, Guiding Light was a show that I grew to love, having been exposed to it by my mother. At least during its best times, it rose above the typical soap schlock that so often defines the genre, painting interesting and realistic stories about how characters related to one another. Thankfully, there's such a great amount of old episodes and of segments formatted into playlists on the internet, so this series is intended as our guide of what to expect as you navigate each era, as well as food for thought for those who are fans. First, let's start by going back to the origins of the show. Originally formatted as a radio soap opera on NBC in 1937, the show's initial leading character was Reverend John Rutledge, who gave guidance to many in his community. Although most of the program's history was set in a fictional version of Springfield, Illinois, the early years rotated between the fictional Chicago suburb of Five Points and the fictional Los Angeles suburb of Selby Flats. NBC canceled the show twice, knocking it off the air for a few months each time, and the second time led to CBS picking it up in June of 1947, where it continued for almost a decade. In 1952, The Guiding Light, as it was known back then, made its debut on CBS television, and it was carried on both radio and television for 4 years. The longest-running family on the program, the Bowers, made their debut in 1948, fittingly not long after the move to the CBS network that would be their home for the next 61 years. They moved into the forefront of the program solidly in the 1950s and served as the anchors until the early 1980s. The Bowers were able to occupy the center of the universe not only because of their down-home, middle American appeal, but because the format of the show did not allow for a huge ensemble. Amazingly, The Guiding Light was formatted to a 15-minute limit until 1968, expanding to a half hour at that time and eventually a full hour in 1977. 2 years before that, the show changed its name to Guiding Light in an effort to modernize the brand. At 15 minutes, the number of scenes per day was minimal, and even at a half hour, the format still didn't allow for a wealth of regular characters. In those years, the show still made sparing use of a couple of cheat concepts that would be used and overused in the years to come. Soap opera rapid aging syndrome, or SORAS, which involves making characters, primarily young ones, much older in their time off screen, and retroactive continuity, or retconning, which is an outright changing of the past to suit the needs of the moment in storytelling. While the modern era of Guiding Light began definitively in 1983, the 1970s laid the groundwork in a few ways for characters that would define the show as most people remember it today. The highly controversial star-crossed couple of Holly Lindsey and Roger Thorpe came onto the canvas in 1970 and 1971 respectively, with Alan Spaulding and his young son Philip coming into the picture in 1977, and Philip's uncle Ross Marler in 1979. But most of the other characters of the 1970s and early 1980s ended up leaving as the revolution of 1983 took place in the form of Pam Long's hiring as head writer. The show had just introduced a number of young characters in the 3 years leading up to this time period, but almost none of them factored into what we'll call the revolution era of the program, which lasted from 1983 into approximately 1990. That will be the focus of our next installment. Thank you for tuning into this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.